TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 617, and this week we have returning guests and a new guest. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for 6 Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Tom. I chair Visual Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Hello, Malik here. I'm artistic director of Griot Theater.
Hi, this is Yusun. I'm a costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Marcia Powers, and I'm involved with 6 Degrees of Geek, fandom charities, and the new Hellmouth Con happening in Los Angeles next June.
All right, let's start off with the news. Tom, hit us. What you got?
Amazon's Jack Ryan, with newly minted hottest man of the year from People Magazine, John Krasinski, is headed to the big screen after 4 seasons on the small screen.
Wow.
Sophie Turner is going to star in a Tomb Raider series from Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Amazon is shutting down Freevee, its ad-supported video streamer, most recently, the kid spy show that we used to like before season 3 tanked was on Freevee.
And Alex Cross?
Alex Cross. No, Alex Cross. Was that Alex Cross?
No, it was Alex something.
That's the new one with Aldous Hodge.
I messed that up. Never mind. Continue. Alex
Amazon...
Ryder.
Alex Ryder.
That was it.
Alex
yeah.
is mixed up. And they're also have a Mass Effect TV series in the works from the writer of Fast and Furious 9. At Apple TV Plus.
Bad choice.
Lena, don't get me started. Lena Dunham is going to write the Sam Bankman-Fried movie for Apple and A24 based on Michael Lewis' book Going Infinite. CBS has picked up NCIS Origins and Papa's House for full seasons. Disney Plus Percy Jackson series has cast Andra Day as Athena for season 2. I approve. Euphoria season 3 at HBO is finally moving forward with an 8-episode season, which will probably be the last one since Zendaya is like a big movie star now. Martha Plimpton and Maria Enos are joining Mark Ruffalo in the HBO drama Task. The Harry Potter TV series is eyeing Academy Award winner Mark Rylance for the role of Dumbledore. That's a good choice. And finally, Ted Lasso alum Phil Dunster, a.k.a. Jamie Tart, is joining Steve Carell in a new comedy series from Bill Lawrence and Matt Tarsis. Hulu has renewed Reasonable Doubt from the Onyx Collective for season 3, and they're giving some of their shows a showcase on ABC for mid-season, including The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and Only Murders in the Building, which will be on linear television. Lady Gaga is going to appear in Wednesday season 2 at Netflix. Avatar The Last Airbender season 2 has found its Judy Longfang, the Boulder, and has cast sympathizer star Hoa Zwandi, and Outer Banks has been renewed for its 5th and final season. Oh, for Paramount Network, the first episode of Yellowstone, the long-awaited season 5.2 premiere, is their biggest premiere night ever without Kevin Costner.
Oh, but here's the thing that's weird is a lot of viewers didn't know he wasn't going to be on it. And I think he gets killed in the premiere. And now everybody's mad. Everybody's like, even though it was the biggest premiere they've ever had, like the internet went nuts with people being so upset. Like, I was like, how did they not know? But there were people who didn't know. And so
they killed him?
Yeah. He quit. Yeah. Well, he quit the show and then they killed his character. And then the internet lost its mind. And so now people are vowing to never watch the show again, which is crazy.
I'm personally looking forward. I doubt they're going to do it if they just kept Yellowstone without him.
They're talking about it.
That's the plan.
Because at first they weren't sure about that.
Talking about doing season 6 without him with Cole Hauser and Kelly Riley. And they got spinoffs galore. It's cray-cray.
Yeah.
White Lotus alum Haley Lou Richardson is joining Emilia Clarke in the Peacock spy thriller series Ponies. And finally, Showtime has announced that Dominic West will join the espionage thriller The Agency. And that's all I have.
All righty.
Stuff.
Yeah. Let's start off with the shows. First up, we're going to discuss Penguin, and we're going to talk episodes 5 through 8, which is basically just wrapping up the series from where we left off. And I'm going to quickly give my opinion because I know you guys really like the show. And I thought the first 4 were pretty good. And I was like, okay, I'll suck up my doubts and keep on watching. But it's just not my show. It's just not my kind of show. I'm not the kind of person that likes to watch a show about the main character or the, not even really, like the anti-hero being.
He's not an anti-hero. He's a straight up villain. He's evil.
Thank you. That's true. So I don't like following that. So I usually, if there's a character that I can follow that's not the bad guy, then I'll follow that. And that's what Victor was for me. And I was enjoying Victor's story. And I was watching it for his journey. And then they, like, I mean, I saw it coming. All you guys said you saw it coming. I saw it coming, too.
Well, it's,
like, go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
You want to say, here's the thing, and can I just do kind of the whole movement of the second half?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
What's interesting is we're really kind of, even though Sophia's damaged, we're kind of rooting for her because she's got valid reason for being screwed over.
True.
And Oz has basically treated her awfully and lied to her and tried to manipulate her.
He manipulates everybody, yeah.
Everybody, you know, there's this back and forth between Oz is getting one up on somebody and they're getting one up on him. And the fact that Sophia went to, why am I blanking on the other bad dude's name?
The Marconis.
Maroni. Maroni.
Maroni's.
He goes to the Maroni family. Oh, by the way, she toasted your boy from your show, Legacies. He was the son. He was Sharan.
Right.
That was
Landon. Penguin literally lit him on fire. Yes.
Literally lit him up. But so what I, for me, the beginning of the end was when Maroni has a heart attack after he basically kind of has a, you know, Penguin kind of one-ups him. And then while they're struggling, he has a fatal heart attack. And then, of course, Penguin puts many rounds at him. And then, you know, it's a matter of time. The show is called Penguin, not Falcone or whatever, Gigante. So the way it ends, I mean, for me, we found out how evil this dude was when we get a flashback showing that as a child, he straight up engineered the murder of the deaths of his siblings, one older, one younger, because he wanted mom all to himself. So the finale.
What tripped me out about that, and which your girl proves, is as much as he claims to be a mama's boy and loves his mom, he kind of, you know, if she gets her finger cut off, he's totally fine with it if he doesn't have to break his illusion or delusion.
Delusion.
And it's really showed that he doesn't really love his mom as much as he claims he did. So I was just like, yeah, that's nope, I'm out.
So when we get to the point at the very end where he finally, you know, is triumphant over Maroni and Falco, he sets Sophia up. I figured that he was going to arrange for her to take the fall for all the bad stuff.
Right.
Stuff he did. And then finally, when everything's looking good for him and Vic, and he has Vic, and Vic says, "You're like family to me." It's like, dude, you don't know he murdered his brothers. And his mother knew and put a hit on him and then changes her mind at the last minute. So Vic represented the center of good for the series, and when you get rid of him, you just get left with this, you know, hole of nihilism, and the dude's straight up evil. And the fact that his hooker slash girlfriend betrayed him, which he probably doesn't know, and he puts her in the same outfit his mom wore when he was young. I'm like, ew, dude, you got some serious, you need that shirt more than Sophia does.
Yeah.
So it was a satisfying ride, but I don't need a sequel. Just give me the Batman Part 2.
So I don't think, they don't intend to make a sequel, right? Isn't
this correct?
This is, I mean, to me, that's part of why I enjoyed it, is it told the story it wanted to tell, and it finished. So, you know, and I'm going to work backward a little bit. The fact that Victor goes down at the end makes absolute sense. It, to me, that actually is part of what makes the story satisfying. Because even though we say that Penguin is not the anti-hero, he's a villain, there are various, there are multiple moments in the show where we are rooting for him. They get him captured a lot, which is a little bit of a plot thing, but we continually root for him at various times in the show to figure out a way to get out of his situation. So I think that the fact that we root for this guy who's capable of all of this horrible behavior is actually rather poetic, that we end it with his, not only his choice to continue to be a monster, but he's essentially saying, I have to kill you in order to be a monster, because if I have someone I care about, people can use that against me. I thought that was actually rather poetic. And I think it was, because we don't expect to see a season two, that's where you spend your time. I also just want to talk about, the concept of who he is with his mother is so much what this show is about. And all of the actions he takes and all of the things that he goes for are connected to that relationship. I love how they revealed the history of what happened to his brothers. Earlier in the show, they talk about his brothers being lost to the city. So you kind of assume, you know, they got killed in gang stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you realize they were little boys and they show the backstory of how he did it, I'm not clear how soon, how exactly premeditated that was. I mean, it wasn't premeditated. We know he was angry, right? He wanted to play with them. He was angry. I'm going to lock this door on you. I don't think when he locked the door, he was like, I'm going to drown you. I think he locked the door out of anger. And then as the night went on and he realized what was happening, he did nothing to correct it.
Yes.
And actually, I thought that was kind of, in a, you know, dastardly way, kind of beautiful how they told that story. Last piece I want to say, just in terms of execution, I loved the beer summit that he had when he was trying to convince the other mob bosses to join him. You've seen a version of that scene many, 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 many times in many, many, many different shows. And the idea that you have this sound effect of the beer cans popping as a way to signify when everybody was on board, I thought was just great execution. So what could have been just a plot point actually felt like a pretty cool event to me. So to me, the show was really satisfying. There were problems, for sure. But overall, I thought the show was really satisfying.
Yeah, I agree with Malik on a lot of points. I thought that, first of all, the show was mounted beautifully. It was like a movie. It was gorgeously done. But I don't require that a character necessarily be a good guy in order for me to find him somebody whose story I'm going to follow. I just require that he be interesting. And that's what they did with the Penguin. They made him a compelling character. They made him an interesting character whose story I wanted to follow. He's at no point a nice guy, although, as Malik pointed out, you do find yourself oddly rooting for him. Maybe it's because everybody else is just so much worse, but you're invested in his story. There's also, I think, in the back of everyone's mind, well, he can't die here because he's got to become the Penguin that we know as the adversary of Batman. So there's this part of us that wants to see that play out, that's invested in that character we know he is going to be. And so we're kind of on this ride with him, as horrible a person as he is. And at no point do they try to say, oh, no, really, you know, deep down, he's good. That never arrives. Every time they kind of suck you in to feel bad for him or feel sympathy, they smack you upside the head with the 2x4 of, no, this guy is a villain. He's horrible. He kills people. And he really is a narcissistic sociopath. Even his love for his mother, as Tom pointed out, it only just goes so deep. It still is something in service to his neediness, his narcissism. Yeah. He's willing to let terrible things happen to his mom. The ending where, despite his mother's wishes to put her out of her misery, if she, you know, really bottoms out, from this disease, which she will, she makes him promise. She begs him in a moment of lucidity to do this. And instead, he keeps her trapped in that loft, staring out the window, trapped in that bed. And it's the worst possible outcome. And we see at the end that there's enough cognition that she still has left, that she there's this tear running down her face as she's lying in that bed. And then he goes down and plays, you know, the loving mom and loving son with his prostitute girlfriend downstairs. You know, it's just so, yes, it is. It's that's creepy. Just, it's horrible.
I'm sorry. I hope she got a lot of money to pretend to be mommy, because that's just freaking weird.
But Allison, that moment that he chooses, though, he is keeping his earlier promise to get her a place with that view while betraying his more recent promise to not let her linger on like that. I think it's a beautiful
Be careful
conflict.
What you wish for, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to see a spinoff with Catwoman and Falcone.
They left that little tidbit. Yeah. I thought that was great when you
cook up for that.
Yeah, when she finds out that you know, oh, you've got a half sister, and guess what? She's Selena Kyle. I loved that. So yeah, maybe we'll be getting a Catwoman thing soon. That would be nice.
All right, wrapping that up. You guys liked it. I can't hang out with the sociopathic, narcissistic, crazy man. No, thank you. All right, next up, we're going to talk about Superman episodes 4-6. And Tom, you helped us out with remembering which episodes those were. But the wedding, it won't take long, mainly because the wedding episode was characters we don't care about.
Characters you don't care about anyway. Yeah, Kyle and Chrissy do not get married in episode 4. So that's
that was a lot of buildup for nothing.
Yeah, that was, considering they only had 10 episodes for the final season, that was weird to, I can see giving those characters a bit of closure, but for me it was kind of
it was the characters that I didn't need closure for. Like, I never liked Kyle in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, so having him wrap up his whole, like, oh, I've gotten, we're going to get married because we're having a baby. I don't care, dude. Like, whatever. And then, of course, their barn is cursed. So every event they try to have in the barn goes wrong.
Although, this, if I remember correct, this is the episode where Jonathan gets his powers, isn't it?
That is correct. And that is the only thing that happened in the episode that was good. But I love the scene where he goes. No, he gets his powers
earlier.
Episode three, he has the big fit, yells at his brother, but 4 is the one where he starts training with his dad. So
and
they start
mom.
Doing. Yeah, right.
Doesn't he go see Ghost Grandma? I can't remember.
I think they saw her earlier, but the whole point is they do training, and it just shows the difference between how quickly he's a better Superboy than his brother.
Well, because he's naturally coordinated and not emo.
Yes. All those things. And then his brother goes and sulks in a corner and goes, you can just be Superboy and I won't be Superboy anymore. Sad. But this episode was not the best. So mainly, like I said, it was just dealing with stuff that was not that important, I think. And it wasn't until we get to the next episode, which I thought was a much better use of our time, which was Luther. What was... Was that the fist fight in the street? Was that one?
I believe so.
Yeah, so the thing that I liked about this version of Luther is, even though he's a big guy, he doesn't really use the fact that he's a big guy to... I mean, Luther's still smart, and that's really what they were going for. And it was just a good actor who happened to be a big guy. But this was the first time where it felt like, oh, they cast him so they could have this fist fight. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of disappointing. But I did like the whole concept of Lois realizing that she was kind of having silent communication with Doomsday. And that part of the reason that he was doing the orders that he was doing was kind of like getting back at Lois for having a perfect life that he didn't have anymore. And her communication with him, I thought, was really good. I like that.
Well, I thought it was good to take Doomsday off the, take the playing piece off the board, because that was
Because he was too overpowered. He was too overpowered.
Because this version of Doomsday is way overpowered compared to other versions we've seen. But for me, episode 6, where the townspeople and the worst kept secret ever, which will come to a head in episode 7, which we're not talking about, but in episode 6, where Luther is planning to build a new plant and doing his manipulations to get land, and the townspeople basically stand up for the Kents, because Clark grew up with them and they know that and Lois tells them this dude is bad news.
Lana too, she's the mayor, and she's going around telling people, this is too good to be true. This is a big corporation coming in, and they're giving us a lot of money up front, but they're going to screw our town. And I did like the town standing together, and I also like the undercurrent that like half the people knew he was Superman, and they were like, "Oh, so we shouldn't do it, right?" And he's like, "No." And they were like, "Okay, well, we're not going to do it because you said not to do it." So I like that. It kind of combined the kind of small town working together as a unit, kind of give you that kind of feel good. Plus the fact that the town was kind of proud that half the people in town already knew his secret. And they were just like, okay, Superman says not to do this. We're not going to do it. Yay.
Enough people know that that's what we'll talk about next time.
But yeah, I'd say I see where we're going for the end of this season. And for the most part, I kind of like it. I like where they're trying. I could feel where they're trying to wrap everything up. Like if it feels like the only things that I feel like that are left hanging is I still want to know about John. What is John's last name? The guy with the suit? John and his daughter?
Irons.
Yeah. I'd rather have had episodes about him and his daughter versus the marriage that wasn't a marriage thing. Like Irons and his daughter, way more interesting than the other dude and his not girlfriend or not married, not wife, whatever, not wife thing. Like that storyline was the most boring ever. Like I was like, were they just cheaper to have? Like, why would they go with them? I wasn't clear. Anyway, but let's move on. But like I said, next week's, like you said, was a really good, like it got me right in the heartstrings, but I want to give time for that one and the next two. And hopefully that's all really good review. Next up, we're going to talk Shrinking, and we're going to talk episodes 5 and 6, and episode 5, help me out. Somebody, episode 5 is.
That's the aftermath of Alice sleeping getting found out.
Yeah, punched a boob and put a freaking piece on it.
Say again?
She got punched in the boob and then put her frozen peas on it. That was a great.
That is that's pretty much what happened. That's very good. So Yusa, do you want to lead out Shrinking?
Yes, I love this show so much. It does such a beautiful job with all of the relationships. I think it's a really hard thing. We haven't seen dramedies, that word came around, you know what I mean? I don't know, 15 years ago or something. We haven't seen good dramedies lately. And it's so hard, I think, to balance both humor and that kind of poignant drama that really makes you cry even. And I have to tell you that not in this episode that we're talking about, not the boob punching episode, but later on we'll discess the episodes. It's a rare thing that a show can make me laugh as hard as the show makes me laugh and then cry. It's a brilliant thing. So in this episode, we've got Harrison Ford's character. His daughter comes to visit, and they go.
Oh, the wife. The ex-wife.
Yes, the ex-wife comes. So that's like a big deal. And then we've got Jessica Williams' character. We find out about her home life more with her sister
and her mom.
And her mom, the situation there, and the life blocking, you know, kind of a thing that her sister does. you know, so that's really, so we're constantly learning more about all of the different characters, even, you know, the fallout aftermath of, and we'll see about this, the annoying neighbor, and how she deals with the loss of
Liz.
Liz,
the annoying neighbor. I was like, who's the annoying neighbor? Oh, right.
Yes, right. The, you know, and how she deals with the loss of, you know, working with the truck, and her doggy photos not be. There's a lot going on in this. Hang on, can we move on to the next few episodes?
Well, I want somebody.
Yes, jump in. Someone else talk about this episode.
Let's talk about how awesome it was to see Kelly Bishop again after Gilmore Girls playing Harrison Ford's ex-wife.
Yes. I love her, and I love She's the awesome. Fact that that casting her was perfect. Like, I could imagine what their marriage was like immediately just because I already know that actress and how she likes to play the characters. I was like, oh, yeah, that works. I can see it. But I feel like the big thing is I'm going to call him Roy Kent. Because I like calling him Roy Kent, and I know that's not his name, his character's name in the show, but watch the last of yeah.
I don't think they even give his name.
They do. Yeah, but I just don't know what it is. And I don't care because he's always going to be Roy Kent to me. So I really love what they're doing with this character and what it says about forgiveness and what it says about, you know, grief and the different stages of all of those things, because as much as you're thinking about the mother and the husband of Tia, I think that's her name, how much they're grieving, nobody really thought about the drunk driver at all, and he's grieving in a very different way. And but because of the fact that the whole thing is, you know, really his fault, no one is supporting him in his grief. And I thought that having, only thing I will say negative about this is I felt like her turn was too quick, like one episode too fast.
We're
like I like
next episode.
That's so you're going ahead, Libya. Yeah.
Sorry, but yes.
But go ahead. I just
felt like her arc is beautiful. I loved the entirety of her arc. I just felt like it happened just one episode too fast. Like I felt like it needed maybe one more episode for it to feel completely organic to me.
Or,
but other than that, oh, go ahead.
Or I have to say it could have been just how the scene was played, since we are moving ahead a little bit. You're talking about the fact that she ends up kind of not being forced, but then choosing to confront him finally. And I agree that it felt slightly too abrupt. I don't know that you needed it to postpone another episode. I think it literally could have happened in the scene. And it was slightly the way it was written and slightly the way it was played. We should have had more anger / pain before she's ready to sit down and chew the fat with him. So I think it could have happened in the scene. So while it was a moving scene, I do agree it was slightly abrupt. I just want to give a shot. Oh, I want to slightly change topics. Tom, were you going to talk about that piece?
Yeah, it wasn't quite as earned as Rebecca's apology to Ted in season one of Ted Lasso, because they let that arc play out longer. That was episode 109, and we've known since 101 that she set Ted up to fail. So it felt much more organic, whereas there was like a missing beat. There was like just one missing beat.
One beat. I feel like it was just one beat that was missing.
And it could have been within another episode, or it could have been within the same episode, but it was still missing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah. I just want to give a shout out to Jessica Williams, who...
Love her!
She is... there's so much to love about her work, not you know, across the show. I'm so glad they decided to put to bed her relationship with Jimmy being physical, because that just it didn't feel earned. It didn't feel real. It didn't feel anything.
They didn't have any chemistry. Yeah,
they had no chemistry, but it did lead to a lot of funny scenes, a lot of riffs.
but I mean, not them together.
Great
though.
Dialogue.
I think they're much better exes than they were together.
Yes, and colleagues
Yes.
So I'm glad we've gotten over that hump because it was depressing me a little bit.
That could have been done an episode sooner.
So I did appreciate seeing her with her family as well, the dynamic with her mom and her sister.
Renee Watson, welcome back, Connor, baby.
Yusin is trying to say something. You've been trying to say something for a minute.
Yeah, I do want to say something about, I want to go back to the Alice Roy Kent scene because I want to give props to
Brett Goldstein's,
no, the daughter, Alice.
Looking
at okay.
I want to go back. I just want to say, because I agree with you guys, but it still didn't, even though I feel like, yes, there was a missing beat. I feel like her acting was very real for me. As a person who lost a parent at her age, I felt very connected to the scene. And I have to tell you, I haven't cried in like at least a year about anything in life. And I found myself watching the scene and not bawling, but this tiny little tears kind of coming out.
Just one tear.
You had a Denzel tear just coming out.
That speaks. Like there was truth in the scene, you know, and there was truth in her acting, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it was a gentle scene. It wasn't overacted, you know, and it wasn't histrionic. There wasn't a lot of, you know, it wasn't one of those scenes where it was like misery porn or like, you know, this, it still stayed within the tone of the show. And I thought it was a delicate balance, you know, and, you know, telling that whole story about how her mom was so conscientious, you know, and even in her own tiny little way, looking for forgiveness, you know, for bumping that kid and then, you know, trying to give him the, mm-hmm. you know, the hat, you know what I mean? So there's that her, you know, seeking her own tiny little forgiveness kind of a thing. So there, you know, it was very layered that
it scene, was,
you know, and her and Alice telling it, you know, and then, yes, you're right. That beat her just kind of saying like, well, my mom would have forgiven you. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, it was earned in the sense that we learn a little bit about her mom's personality. You know what I mean? Because we don't know that much about her mom. But yes, I agree, but I don't want to take away from the fact that the scene actually did, you know, do a great job of that delicate balance, you know, still between the humor and it didn't seem out of place in the series. And it made me cry. And that's a big thing, you know, for me, because I don't like, you know, fake emotions or, you know, making me feel manipulated. And I don't think I felt manipulated at all. Like I said, it wasn't a This Is Us tear fest for me. It was just, you know,
just the one tear. Okay.
Anyway.
All right. All right,
it's smart that Lewis asks her, what was your mom like?
Mm-hmm.
That was the window in that he was trying to.
And it was believable. I would want to know, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But let's wrap this one up.
Oh, don't forget, this is huge. In this episode, in the truck, the dad blames the therapist. And they have
right. Well, what's his name?
Sean.
Sean. Yeah. So Sean, the whole the whole thing is based on his dad not acknowledging his pain and treating him poorly in a situation where basically his father let him down. And when he finally confronts his dad and tells him that, his father just like does not say the right thing, and that leads to this fight where he got jacked up. But I will say I loved his drunken confessions, like his drugged out.
Confessions. Get it right. Confessions.
They were great. They were fantastic. Great. He was just calling everybody out, letting everybody's secrets out all over the place.
Gabby and the White Saviors.
That was fantastic. So like all of that was really good.
Jessica Williams.
Yeah. Big head.
Yeah. That was great. All right, we got to wrap this one up, but I think we're all saying thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, we're going to talk what we do in the shadows, and we're going to do 4 through 6, starting from the railroad, which I'm just going to say overall for the next 3 episodes, these were better than the first 3. But it still suffered from the same issue that the first 3 had, which is, what are we doing with this season? It doesn't have each season of What We Do in the Shadows has usually a very clear through line. And I'm in episode 6, and I don't know couldn't tell you what the through arc is.
And as amusing as the Apocalypse Now homage was in episode 605, people who aren't film profs or don't love the movie, they're not going to get it. They're not going to get it. And I'm like, kind of like the After Hours tribute in season 2 of Ted Lasso that y'all hated. It's like, if you don't know the reference, the homage is not going to do you any good.
Yeah, so, it was just Nandor. Nandor being weird. Yeah, Nandor being weird.
He completely lost it. He had
delusional. Having an army made of mannequins.
He's not delusional. He actually does have a real army, but still,
why is Colin Robinson joining his army like for real and really being
Colin
committed?
Robinson is desperate for friends. He wants to belong. He just wants to do he anything does. That he belongs.
He does, but it's just that was a little extra for Colin Robinson. I did like that Guillermo firing Laszlo like broke him. I did appreciate that. Because it does kind of make sense to me, because their whole pyro dynamic flipped on its head.
With Nandor standing outside the restaurant and them filming him, you know, when they were all partying and cheering, and he's like, I'm longing or whatever. It was
sad. Crazy. It was super sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
no, great.
I did like that. Okay, so we had the railroad one, which was not that good because the railroad storyline was kind of dumb.
Oh, that neighbor just annoys me.
Ugh. I hate the neighbor, too. I agree. And what was the one after the neighbor? That was Nandor's army, which actually was kind of crazy because he ended up having a real army at the end.
He has a real army, yeah.
That was, like, super bizarre. I was like, who are these guys? Like, they don't really explain that. And then what was the third one?
Laszlo's ghost. Laszlo's father's ghost.
It was okay.
It was
like...
Colin Robinson is craving attention, affection.
That's true. And the father was a really good con man. He was a great con man. I love the fact that Laszlo gets really insulted every time Colin Robinson says he doesn't have a father figure or he never had a parent. And he's like, dude, I raised you from a baby. And he's like, why are you being crazy? Because he doesn't remember it for some reason, which is insane.
Well, we were shown he has that life cycle where he
regenerated.
He regenerates and he only remembers what he wrote down in the, you know, in a book in the previous cycle. So he goes through all the previous books, and apparently he never wrote down any of his experiences with Laszlo, so he doesn't remember any of that at all. What I don't understand is why all of a sudden he's so needy to be with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
as a psychic vampire, he's always been the kind of guy who wants to depress people, wants to, you know, I mean, he's deliberately antisocial. And so I don't get what the change is, you know. I mean, it was funny, but it's like, how is that his character?
Yeah, and how is he feeding off of this at all? Like, he's not feeding any boredom on anybody or doing anything like he would normally do.
In a really long time. He hasn't fed in a really long
time. Yeah, basically. And so it's just really bizarre. And Guillermo being at this corporation, I don't care. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, I get that the joke is supposed to be that, you know, he's stopped working for literal vampires and now he's working for human vampires.
I know. I got the joke.
But that's enough for like one episode, not an entire arc.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I don't understand what the through line is for this. At first, I thought it was, well, we're seeing the growth of Guillermo as he pulls away from them. But, you know, I'm not really getting much of that.
Well, because every time he pulls away, yeah, every time he pulls away,
they pull him back in.
They pull him back in.
Yeah, I just think
it talk about cinematic references.
Yes, yeah. Season pickup. And they're just like, oh, what do we do? Oh,
exactly. It feels like last season should have been the last season.
That would have been a great place to end.
It was a great ending. Like, yeah, the way last season ended was perfect. It took everything full circle. It had a perfect ending. And now we have this extra season that is just kind of wandering around, you know, and I don't know where we're going. But I'm still
watching it because I'm hoping that they pull it together and, you know, turn it, that they have an idea how this is going to end and it's going to be worth it. But yeah, this has been kind of a disappointing season. It's had moments. It's funny. I mean, I Doug personally Jones. Loved. Yes. Doug,
oh,
Jones,
Doug
is
Jones
always hilarious.
Is
always great. And I love Steve Coogan. He was great as Laszlo's father. And the whole, you know, Apocalypse Now thing I thought was very funny, and they did it very well. But, you know, it's just like, okay, these are little bullet points. They don't come together as a whole season.
Correct. Yeah. Individual episode stuff is good, but yeah, they don't come together.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. So let's wrap that up.
Sideways.
There are thumbs. Next up, oh good lord. Next up, we're going to talk Agatha All Along, and we're going to talk the last three episodes and wrap this up. We're going to actually, I think, the best three episodes of the series. Episode 7 blew my mind just from just pulling together all these threads that seemed random throughout the season. And what is the witch's name? I can't remember her name.
Lilia.
She was just saying random things from the first six episodes, just in random places, and everybody'd be like, "What? Huh? What are you talking about?"
And then she'd be like, "What are you talking about?"
And she was the same way.
She was like, "Wait, what?" And then this episode, you finally understand what's going on, because she's living her life out of sequence.
Out of order.
Yeah, out of order. And she doesn't know why this is happening, but it just started happening. And we just kind of came in the middle of it happening. And this, they put it all together, sort of in order, kind of. And it was amazing.
It still went back and forth, but it helped you understand the previous things you saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But it also showed that the first time we meet her and she froze for a moment, that was a time jump too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was really, really creative storytelling. It helped bring things together. I also have to say, I mean, Seven was absolutely one of my favorite of the whole series, because it gives meaning to things. Her character found her meaning in what her death was supposed to be, right? Ultimately, her secret that she learns is, how do I die? But more importantly, why do I die? And she had the absolutely best death of any of the witches. She went out like a soldier and took out all of the Salem Seven in one fell swoop. And her death felt like you earned something.
Yeah.
Other deaths were like, oh, they're dead now? Okay.
There were surprises. It felt like they were surprises for surprise sake.
Yes.
As opposed to this, yes.
And this one had emotional content. It was a little bit like Hodor, you know, she was holding the door. So I absolutely appreciated that episode in particular.
I will have to say, though, that Hodor reference still hurts my feelings. Like, why would you bring that up?
Hodor really didn't have a choice, though, and she did. She made a choice to do this. And I thought that was one of the things that made her so effective as a character.
Yeah,
and save Jennifer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just thought that, you know, the way they pulled all these things together, because when you see her shouting out things at random, you know, like this sort of like witch's Tourette's syndrome, like, you know, that she's got. And you just chalk it up to her being an eccentric character at the beginning. And then you discover, no, it's not just an eccentricity. She is really living her life out of sequence. And everything that she does is meaningful, ultimately, to how things resolve and to how the story goes. And I just, and it even goes beyond her later on when Agatha realizes that this moment where she says duck is referring to a very specific thing that she needs to do. So I thought all of this was really fabulous and terribly affecting. I actually watched it twice because it was so moving to watch. And there was so much in it too, even in addition to that, just all of the characters dressed up as different Disney witches.
Oh, right. Yeah,
was
yeah.
And their choice of who was
Wizard of Oz, not Disney.
It took me a moment to get why her being a princess was derogatory. I was like, oh, okay.
It's Glinda.
It's Glinda the Good Witch.
I'm not talking about the green one. I'm talking about Lilia's character.
Yeah, but she was Glinda the Good Witch.
Patty LuPone.
Yeah, she was.
I think they made a reference to it.
We watched it behind the scenes. Trust us, it's Glinda.
There's a making of special that they have where they specifically say she was supposed to be Glinda.
Do you know the line I'm talking about though? In the moment when they're dressed as witches and they talk about their comments, she makes reference to the fact that it was slightly derogatory.
She was talking about Jen.
She's talking the one that looked green. She was saying that her costume was derogatory.
And that was not from Wizard of Oz. That was from Snow White,
the crone.
Yeah.
So when
the Wicked Queen turns herself into the crone. She's even holding an apple.
See, yeah. We women figured that one out.
That's not what I'm talking about, but I'll talk about it off air.
All right. Marcia, just talk. We need to keep moving, so we can't pause on this. So, Marcia, you haven't really talked that much about any of our shows. So, what are your thoughts about this? And you can move on to the next episode as well.
Okay, so
we can go through this.
I loved this episode also. I then had to rewatch everything to catch all those snippets.
Wow.
I'm going to be rewatching this for a third time because episode 8 just blew my mind. Very quickly about this episode, her teacher, when she was a child and mm-hmm. talked to her, every time she came back, the teacher kept saying, well, there's a reason you're doing this. There's a reason you need to do this. And at the end, she comes back as herself, as the young girl. The teacher has already talked to her before as an adult and says, okay, now you're ready to go again. And that caught me because she now is going again through her life cycle. So I'm wondering if that's going to be the next.
She's trapped in a loop.
I think she's got a loop going, but a positive loop going because the teacher seems to be happy that she's back. And you realize that as a child, it is actually her as an adult inside the child. That was one thing that I really got hooked on. And then the other is, while we assume that it is all seven of the crazy children, witches, that got killed by being staked, you only see five bodies. Two of them, when they turned into animals, turned into birds.
Oh, so you're saying two escaped.
I think two escaped because they were birds. And since we don't see her actually die, I think that's why we see her as a child again with the teacher, who now, instead of having been arguing with her as a child over and over and over again about do this, do that, you need to learn, whatever. Now she is, now you are ready. So I think her death may be a little different than what we're expecting also.
Oh yeah, well, because in a sense, she's unstuck in time. Mm-hmm. So she is sort of Schrodinger's witch. She's both alive and dead
at the same time.
I will
I'm sorry, we have to just give her props for that statement.
Yes. So now I will say regarding episode 8, that was just amazing, knowing everything that we've been told and then learning that the song is from the child.
That's nine, Marcy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Eight is the final battle between Death and Agatha.
That's the final trial. And then she needs to cry the tear to grow the plant to get out, and only to find out that all of it is BS.
and so that is my thing that I was really into was the ending. The idea that they show him in his room, and I'm going, Buffy? Rocky Horror? I've already seen that he's got the little figurines and everything. And I had known from almost the beginning that he was Billy. And that, you know, that the kid had actually died and then was taken. And I really never liked the ending of Marvel's, I hated Doctor Strange 1 and 2 anyway, but I didn't like the way it was left. And I had a feeling there was something there. But to find out that he has her power, and that all these years in Eastview, is what, 3 years?
Westview.
That power never came out until now.
Right.
And that, it was just like, oh my God, we are his same universe. And that was amazing because we are in his universe, he's in our universe. I mean, come on, Once More with Feeling? And Rocky Horror together? No, this is just, and then became I have to go rewatch. And then the next episode came and, oh my God, I had to rewatch again.
All right. Yusin hasn't talked yet about this. Go ahead.
I thought episode 7, like everybody else, was brilliant. I watched it twice because I had to watch it twice. I didn't understand what was going on the first time. I got about halfway through. I don't know, maybe I was tired when I was watching it, but I mean, I understood that there was time jumps. I didn't really get, you know, kind of what was going on. And so I started it over again and I thought, okay, I really need to pay attention. And I thought it was really beautifully done. I did feel moved when she sacrificed herself. You know, when she's like pushing her through the door and closing it and she's like slamming on the door and she's like, no, no. And I was like, no, no.
But
I was like, I love you.
I was going to say is, finish your thought there, but can you jump to actually episode 9? Because we got to wrap up Agatha,
Yes. So I'm trying to remember. I mean, somebody help me with how it started. The whole
episode 9?
Probably why you're having difficulty with episode 9 is because nothing interesting happens in episode 9.
What?
Difficulty.
Wait, isn't episode 9 where... No, episode 9 is where it starts with him going, he turns around to see who is in his room, and then it turns out to be the ghost. Of her, of Agnes, she looks great in gray hair, and I thought another gray-haired sister. I thought it was it was fun about how I thought it was interesting how first he was happy to see her, but then he was like, you have to go away, like you have to.
Who wants to be haunted?
Yeah.
Yeah, who wants to be haunted? Yeah. Come on.
And he was like, you have to go away, and he was trying to get rid of her. And then he comes back around.
You're skipping the flashback part.
Which flashback part?
There's a reason why she's skipping it, because it's not interesting.
With her son. Yeah, with her
whatever,
son.
Malik.
Daniel or whatever. Was it Daniel?
Yeah. No, it's I forgot her son's name.
I forgot
it.
Oh,
Nicholas.
Nicholas Scratch.
Scratch.
Nicholas Scratch. So, isn't Scratch also a euphemism for the devil?
Old Scratch is a euphemism for the devil. Yeah.
Right. So I didn't get that reference because I was wondering, like, why is he named Scratch? Is who's the father? Was it the devil? But then
we don't know who the father is. We just know that she said she did not make him, that he came naturally.
Right.
Well, the name in the context of the show.
Right.
She has a line where she says, I made you from scratch.
Okay.
And even though, yes, Old Scratch is a euphemism for the devil, that is the interior reason in the show why she calls
him the name Scratch. Okay, because I got a little confused. I thought, oh, wait, did she somehow have sex with the devil? But then I was like, but the devil is a woman, and then I was like, what is happening? I was like,
Death
I don't know.
Is a woman.
She's Death.
Death. Oh, Death. Death. Okay. So anyway, the point is, the scenes where Agnes gets to
Agatha.
Act, Agatha, sorry, Agatha gets to act were beautiful. I thought the love for her son and the connection she had and Catherine Hahn's acting was finally for me, I think, better than the rest of the series. So
well, I agree with you. I think also the thing that they showed is that she was the whole, when you find out that the road isn't real and that she, the reason why she doesn't know what's going on is because she's never actually been on the road and she doesn't know. So all of her like acting throughout where you thought it was off, it was off for a reason.
It's off because she's
always performing.
Acting performance in this show.
No.
That's why it's off. That's why this episode nine.
Anyway, I'm trying to go back to Yusen. I agree with you. The reason that this works so well is this is the first time we're seeing her like naturally in order versus her reacting to stuff that we don't understand. So right. That's why it works better. And go ahead, Yusen.
Yeah. So for me, I thought it was poignant and, it gave me a reason to sympathize with Agatha, and really care about her in a way that I hadn't throughout the rest of the series. So for me, I thought it was beautiful. I did think that, I'm trying to remember I was going to say how it ended, the whole show ended. They go off together. So
they do that. Yeah.
Yeah,
sort of, kind
of. They're in search of Tommy.
In search of Tommy.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it seems like there'll be another second season. Did we know? Do we know?
Not a second season.
No second season. Oh.
There's a Vision.
They're going to do a Vision show. Yeah. Vision is getting a show.
And it will lead to something. It will continue to lead.
Anyway,
and they're also talking about Young Avengers, too. So.
Oh God! Yeah. It just never ends. The Marvel Universe.
I know.
Marvel Cinematic Universe, man.
I got. But actually, what I liked so much about Agatha, and I've brought this up before, is that it doesn't have to lead into a sequel. They told a story that had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and they wrapped it up. And you don't necessarily. I mean, yes, you can, and I'm sure they will continue these threads outward. But the show itself is of a piece. You don't necessarily need to have seen anything before. You don't necessarily need to see anything after. It just works as its own standalone story. And I think that is when Marvel shows are at their best, when they're just concerned with telling the story at hand.
Jackson,
I think that's why this works so well.
What? Go ahead, Tom.
No, the thing that I really like about episode 9 was it completely recontextualizes the Witch's Road. We see the origins of the song, the permutations. We find out that Death was going to take Nikki in birth. And the bargain was, I can give you time. So she gets to have him until he's about 8 or so, which doesn't help because losing a child is still one of the most painful things any parent goes through, having friends who've lost children at a young age. But the thing that amazed me is, go back to the early episodes. Episode 2, The Witch's Road is a con. It was. It was a con for Agatha to steal power. And then the fact that Billy manifested a physical Witch's Road based on his objects in the room and his, his witch's genetic memory just blew me away. But I just love the line that stuck out to me the most, when they find a boy who's being drowned for Tommy's spirit to inhabit. And he's like, am I killing this boy? And Agatha just tells him, sometimes boys die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a ton of bricks. But yeah, it's just Jack Schaefer. They need to put her in charge of all of Marvel television. Because we didn't get the special effects versus special effects finale we've gotten on most Marvel movies. We got this intimate history lesson and it recontextualizes the whole series, which is why I, like Marcia, will be watching it a third time.
Well, Malik seems to have dissenting opinion. Go ahead, Malik.
Yeah, I enjoyed most of the series. I loved 7, liked a lot about 8. I thought 9 was a disappointment. Once again, it focused back on Catherine Hahn, who I think throughout has done a pretty horrible job as an actor in this role. And so it's probably not a coincidence that the episodes that I enjoy the most are the ones that do not focus on her. When her episode 9, it was just slow. Like all of the moments just took so long to develop to me. I don't mind that they did a flashback to show us the journey with her son, but two things. One is it was really slow. And two, she is now very clearly, definitely morally corrupt and using her son to kill people, which is not very satisfying. It's not of a revelation like, oh, I thought this was a good character and now I see they're bad. It was a character who was mostly bad who you see is even more bad than you thought, which to me is not much of a revelation.
But she's not Penguin bad.
No, she's not interesting enough, right? Penguin is interestingly bad.
I think she just,
here's the other question, two part. What does killing the witches actually achieve for her? Maybe we should know
she
that
gets,
from prior movies.
She gets their power.
But for what?
Life force.
So that
but
she
for
has
what?
Her, so that she has power. She's a witch. She can't do anything without power. She needs
witch
those witches.
Power is draining. That is how
it also keeps her young and alive.
Guys, all of us can't talk at the same time.
So if there's two problems that I have with this. Because her son even asked, why do we have to kill them? And she doesn't have a satisfactory answer to talk to her son. And I'm her son. I don't understand why she has to kill them. The second thing is, and again, maybe I should know this from prior Marvel movies, but they seem to set up the fact that she can only kill them when they attack her.
Yes.
But but there are several, they have a montage of her killing witches who don't appear to be attacking her. She goes into their camp. She lures them into a house. She seems to be able to kill them without first getting them to attack her. And lastly, when they finally do have the montages of the witches' roads where the witches attack her, why is every witch trying to kill her just because she lied about because of the witches' road didn't work?
Okay.
It's like
there's attacking her, Malik. That's her MO.
That's her MO. Yeah, she always does.
Say
that.
Again.
Yeah.
She goads them into attacking them. She didn't
That's
have
correct.
I understand the story point. I'm saying seeing it in action. One, there's a whole lot of witches around. I'm like, how do you find all of these witches? But two, all she does is say we're going to do the witches' road. It fails. And then she says, oh gosh, you guys are failures. Every witch then attacks her because she calls them failures?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me. I thought episode 9, for a lot of logical reasons, but also how it was executed, but also how poor an acting job Catherine Hahn does. I would have loved if we could have just stopped at 8 and you just tell me they live happily ever after or something.
Part of the issue, Malik, is first, all these witches over the decades think she gave up her son for more magic, for more power, than that she's evil because she gave up her child. We now find out that she didn't, she did not murder her child, but this is the story everybody thinks is happening. So now we know this. How did the Witch's Road song start? Now we know this. How and why? Yes, it's a little... But witches, especially back in those days, there was a lot of good witches, bad witches, people who wanted to go after them. And she would goad them because that would give her more and more power. Well, what happens is as the decades go by, as the centuries go by, stories about how horrible she is have grown. And we find out that most of that is BS. But we also find out, as we learn, that she needs to goad them and push them and somehow get them to hate her so that they would go after her and try to kill her, just as her mother and that coven did, because that didn't make sense until the flashbacks. But if you look at the near to last scene where they show that they're standing around today, they're standing in the basement and all of a sudden underneath the floors lights up. You see her face, like, what the hell is going on? It is at that moment she has realized that something is happening and that it is Billy. So when you go back, you watch the show and you watch her with Billy, because that was the moment she knew he was Wanda's child. That is the moment
what
happened.
Well, I don't think that she knew that, because remember, death really drives the stake into her when she says he's not yours.
Yeah.
Guys,
so Marcia, Marcia,
she knows he has magic, but where it comes from, I don't think she
knows. I understand everything that you said. It's just not good television, is my point.
We all disagree with you on that, so, because we loved it. but that's fine. Next up, we're going to talk about The Diplomat. Okay, Marcia, I guess you're excited about talking about The Diplomat. We're going to talk about the first three episodes of The Diplomat. And so since you're so excited and almost jumped out of your seat, do you want to lead the discussion? Because this is I will set up one thing, which is this is season two premiere. And where we left off at season one is a bomb went off. And we have three people we don't really know their fate that we semi care about. We have Ronnie, who's the aide. We have Stuart, who is the ambassador's like second in command. And we have the husband. What's his name? I forgot his name.
I love how we all keep forgetting. Corn dog. How?
Corn dog. So we have those three characters, and their fate is uncertain. And so the first episode is a lot of tension about who survived the explosion, who's going to live, who's going to die. And so that's really how to keep you on the edge of your seat for the first one. But go ahead, Marcia, you lead us off since you were bouncing.
I can't believe it was only six episodes this season.
We're only talking the first three. Keep that in mind.
I know. I'm fine with all that. I look at how the season, last season went and the upcoming. Kate doesn't realize how much of a manipulator she truly is too. But as much as she keeps telling Hal, I don't want to be with you, I love you, but the marriage is not good for all these reasons, and she bounces back to him, when his life is in jeopardy, everything else can go to hell as far as she's concerned. She is by his side, holding his hand, getting up, talking to other people, doing what needs to be done, but right back to Hal, because no matter what, she loves that man and knows that he does what he does to help the world, even though it is dangerous half the time what he does. But he's not doing it for his own ego. He's doing it to help the world.
He's got a huge ego.
He does, but he doesn't want to be out there in the world. He doesn't want everyone to go, ooh, Hal, and know about him. He just
that's not true. Hal is the definition of narcissism. Absolutely the biggest narcissist on that show, other than maybe the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister is probably bigger. But Hal manipulates the crap out of Kate. He really, really does.
But I also don't think that she would be in the situation she is now safely without Hal.
You're forgetting the
dynamic that the reason that this is the way it is because he was thrown out of his job. So his way of getting back in power is by using her. She is his surrogate. He's doing this by proxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is not a good guy at all. Really hate them together a lot. No. I don't hate them together.
I think that they do love each other, but it is a toxic relationship.
Toxic. It's super toxic. That's why I said I hate them together, because they're super toxic. And I don't find that entertaining to watch. Other than when she beat the crap out of him in season one, that was hilarious.
I was going
to
say that's my favorite moment of the show.
and the security guy going,
and the Secret Service
stop this?
Watching them.
No.
Yeah.
Love them. Wait, I have to say something here. I absolutely love them. I think that the dialogue between them is so unbelievably brutally.
It's brutal.
Real.
Yes,
it's brutal. But I feel like that's a marriage. I think by the fact that they've been, that how long that they've, I've never been married, but From what I know in about other people's marriages and also television, movies. No, but seriously, I find it so fascinating. They have this love-hate kind of relationship, and mm-hmm. this I need you, I don't want you, I desperately trust you, I don't trust you for a second. It's fantastic to watch. And I didn't love them at first. And yes, and I loved when she beat him up. I felt like he deserved it. This second season, first of all, I think is even better than the first, which is pretty rare when you get a show that even, you know, that expands and deepens and is richer than the first season. That's such a, you know, a blessing, because usually sometimes there's a sophomore slump, or sometimes it's good, but it's not as good. This show, because of their relationship, I think it focuses so much on their relationship. There's a lot of scenes of the two of them just having these conversations. And even at one point, I think Kate says to Stuart, maybe, I don't remember, but she was like, well, that's a marriage, you know, or that's our marriage, or something. And I was like, exactly. Like, you know, people, you can hate the person that you love, you know, you can dislike the person that you love, you know, for many, many reasons. And she learns in this season, one of her arcs is that he really, like Marcia was saying, does do things though for the betterment of the world, or you know, not, but not only, like she understands the complexities more about, you know, how he's gotten people killed, you know, his choices have gotten people killed because her choices have, you know.
I like that conversation, because he was like, maybe now you can understand my perspective. But her point was, he was so condescending with how he said it.
Yeah.
That she couldn't really hear the message.
Yes,
And they just kept insulting each other, just left it. Just,
which is fantastic. I mean, they you know, to love someone, but to be able to be that honest with each other, right? That is actually,
some of it was not honesty. Some of it was just kind of brutal, but not for the sake of brutal. But anyway, let's talk story a little bit. Yeah. Allison, you haven't talked in a little bit. What did you think? Of the first, and remember, the end of this is 4th of July. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, I, we've been talking about their relationship, and really, that's the first episode really underlines that. I mean, yes, you know, they just had this situation where they've become as far apart from each other as they possibly could prior to the bombing. She was thinking about dating the, now I've forgotten his position.
Dating
is the nice term. Okay. I'm trying to be polite. Yeah. But yeah, she's, you know, she was having a relationship, or about to go on into a relationship on the side. And really angry at him, and then the bombing happens, and suddenly, yes, she is back at the hospital, and she's beside him like glue, and she's, you know, arranging everything and making sure everything is perfect for him and won't leave him. And this is the kind of relationship they have. I agree, it's toxic, but it is also, as Yusin put, it's fascinating to watch. It's absolutely addicting to watch, because it is so complex. It's not just one thing. Oh, they hate each other, or oh, they love each other. It's both, and I think all of that is going on. And in terms of the plot, now where everybody is searching around, you know, for blame for this, and they're searching for Roiland because she's disappeared. No one can find her. No one knows where she is. And she's clearly involved in this. Sorry?
And what does she have to do with everything?
And what does she have to do with it? Exactly.
Why?
Exactly. So, and, you know, all of that is going on. So there's this search for her. And, you know, and there's these definite, I mean, everything is pointing to the fact, to not the fact, but the belief that the prime minister is to blame
in
for
on
all
it.
Of this,
yeah.
And in on this whole thing. And, you know, just all of this is happening at the same time. So I thought it was just brilliantly done.
One thing can you touch on? Well, that I want to touch on too, based on what you're saying here, is who's to blame. What mm-hmm. I thought was really interesting is once Stewart gets back on his feet, he goes kind of ballistic with blaming her. And I, on one hand, I see his point, which is he said, stay away from this woman. She's terrible. I'm going to end this entire event so that I can keep you away from her. And then what does she do? She calls her, and her phone call leads to the explosion. She did not set the explosion. She did not, you know, do that. So I felt like his level of anger.
Animosity.
And animosity was a little above where it should have been. I get his point in that he wasn't, she didn't listen to him, you know, I get that. I get his.
There's actually a joke in the show that she listens to the last person who's in the room with her.
That's been said of people I've worked with.
Yeah. So
speaking of Stewart, he's got a lot of other problems that emotionally are affecting him also.
Yes.
Bringing this out. I mean, there's he and Idra. And he keeps talking to her about their now dead relationship at her job. Now, yes. As women, we are tired of having that happen, but he continues to do it even though she told him stop.
And her point is very valid, which is she sacrificed her career for him, but it didn't even occur to him to sacrifice for her. So she's like, why would I stay with you? You know, you're not coming at this from an equal perspective.
And he comes back and says, I want us to get back together again. But oh, by the way, I'm still probably going to leave. Like, if she was like,
he doesn't even realize how manipulative he is. Right. And so, and then he backstabs the ambassador to the chief of staff by basically saying she's not ready to be vice president. To be fair, she doesn't want to be vice president. But the way he led that conversation on the phone with her just was so underhanded. And so just, it really made me dislike him. Go ahead, Tom.
I'm not defending him completely, but I think he is oblivious to the amount of PTSD he's experienced, as Hal is. They manifest in two different ways. He knows he does not need to be around when the fireworks go off for 4th of July. Hal is like, I can deal with it until the moment comes, and he can't deal with it. But I think that Stewart is letting that PTSD affect his judgment.
Yes.
And it's on the personal front and on the professional front.
But even
I'm not defending him because, you know, don't poop in your own cave, as the saying goes.
I don't think, is that a saying? I feel like you made that up.
Yes, well, it is, but I'm being euphemistic.
Malik, did you watch Diplomat? You hadn't said anything.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I think the show is one of the smartest shows on television. I think that the way that they tell the story, the dialogue is great, but the way that they tell the story outside of the dialogue is really telling. So if we go back to episode one, when we're in the aftermath of the bombing, and I just love the fact that Kerry Russell's wardrobe tells the story of what's happening.
Oh,
as
the
recovering.
Red dress. Yeah.
So we don't just have lines that say, oh, things are frantic, people don't know what's going on. They show her having to borrow clothing from one person, like, find a pair of pants here, find a jacket there. So if just visually watching the progression of the episodes, you understand the chaos of the aftermath, which I think is brilliant. I love the scene in the first episode where, you know, we know they're CIA, they're security stuff, and they're sitting there writing on a whiteboard in a room to try to communicate to one another.
Yeah.
Again, very low tech, but it absolutely tells a story about what their circumstances are. So I think the first episode just has lots of examples of that. I think that continues on in the rest of the two that we've covered too, which is that the way they tell the story, yes, they have great dialogue, but they also tell the story visually and kind of circumstantially, which is just really refreshing to watch. The performances are amazing, and I'll say it this way. The chemistry between Dennison, the foreign secretary, and Kerry Russell, the ambassador, is so amazing. I don't think Kerry Russell is sexy, but the way he looks at her makes me be like, oh, I'm wrong. Because of their...
If I were in a room with the two of them, I would have to leave. I would just be like, too much energy here.
Yeah. There was an episode, which I can't remember, but someone was watching. She was sitting on the couch, and on one side was Hal, and on the other side was the foreign secretary. Yeah. And the way the three of them are talking and interacting, and the person who's watching, it's like, you can tell they're like, damn, that's hot, and we have a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the idea that they're also talking about what happens in government. So here they have an event they have to put on, but they don't have any money. They don't have enough money to put it on.
Oh, right.
So Hal has gotten them a sponsor. And it like happens with a lot of events. You know, you've got these banners up saying thank you to this company and that company, which makes, you know, what's happened in the last few weeks out in the real world also interesting, which is what I love about diplomat and the real world here. So she goes from, I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to talk to him. He just paid for this entire party. Well, hello, it's so nice to meet you. Watch how, as much as she doesn't want to be in that position of being a diplomat for BS, she is good. Her personality just flips over. And the idea that the hot dogs came with red, white, and blue buns, that the little minutia, like Malik is saying about the scripts, the way they write this little stuff, they're not having to tell you why, they just talk, they just do, and you pick up on it, and you just go, I love the writing. The stories are amazing. I'm looking forward to see what happens in the next few episodes in how all of this now goes with the angst of the foreign secretary along with Kate. How it's going and that's the thing that we haven't really.
Oh, the foiled. About. One thing we forgot was the foiled takeover from the PM. They were gonna have a confidence vote, and that like blew up and went away.
But we also missed.
No, that was the 4th of July.
Ryan. Okay. Yes, but we missed that. Ryland. They found her.
Roiland. Right. At the funeral, they did the little switcheroo thing.
Oh,
yeah,
they did the Thomas Crown thing.
That was cool.
All the redheads and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, but the idea that, you know, she came back, the idea that the takeover from Trowbridge, all of a sudden, everyone backed away, because even though the public doesn't know what we think happened was Trowbridge's fault, but they just love the idea that, you know, it's like he killed Bin Laden. You know, it's like you can do no wrong because you killed the people who killed the person who killed our people. And so what they tried to do to get rid of him, because he really is stupid. He really is.
He is not that bright.
He isn't. Yeah. He is the one who listens to the last person in the room.
Yes.
Because now the public think he walks on water. All the other ministers who were going to fight against him, they just backed
all away. Fell in line. Well, we got
Dennison's line on that. I think is, you talked about, they wrote this before we knew what circumstances we're in now. But he says, when you're serving somebody like that, you see you're not going to change him. So your only decision is about when to light yourself on fire.
Fire.
Yeah. Oh, that was good.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was a good line.
So noble. He's such a good guy, and they talk about that as well.
But we got to wrap this one up. But I see your point. I love that line, but that goes to the conversation between the couples. But we've already covered that, so we're gonna say thumbs up. We're gonna follow up next time and finish.
Feet up, ankles up, elbows up.
we're gonna wrap this one up the next time. So we'll see, and I'm glad that I haven't finished it, so I have something to look forward to. All you suckers already finished the show.
So
you don't have anything
good
to look forward to. All right. Okay. So if you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You can listen to us on pitchpointradio.com. Six Degrees of Geek, iTunes, and YouTube. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.